Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together. Hey, welcome to another episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. My name is Ben Sternke. I am one of the co-founders of Gravity Leadership, and I'm here with Matt Tebbe.
That's me.
Who is also a co-founder of Gravity Leadership and a good friend of mine. And we're also planting a church together.
Are we still doing that?
We're still doing that.
All right.
Yeah, hopefully by the time this podcast comes out, we're still doing that as well. No, I'm sure we will be. And so we've been in this series on our missional theology axioms, as you may know. And we have, in our training, we have six axioms. And we've talked through all six of those, but there's a seventh axiom, a secret seventh axiom for those who listen to the podcast.
It sounds like some apocalyptic Christian fiction title.
Right, right.
The seventh secret axiom.
The seventh axiom, and you need the, it's like a secret password that gets you into, this is like Gnostic.
This is about Masons.
Right. So a couple things about this. This is kind of the way we operate. Like, this is how we came up with these axioms, not by reading a bunch of theology and then like thinking, okay, what are some things that people need to know? We came up with these axioms because we kept encountering the same kinds of issues and problems as we coached and discipled people.
Yeah. So this is important. If you're listening to this and you care about missional theology and missional spirituality, you've had this experience too, where you are running a race with these assumptions and lenses that you have about reality, and you hit these glass walls.
Mm-hmm.
Like relationships that things stop working. You're talking past each other. You find out you have assumptions other people don't have.
Yeah,
those kinds of things. And so when you hit those glass walls enough, it hurts.
Right.
Right.
Number one, especially if your nose protrudes from your face.
Are you talking? Yeah. Wait a second. Are you?
No, we both got noses.
We're good Germans.
Yeah. Yes, it hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. And you also, you know, you're trying to name things that you can't see, but that impact your life. And so the axioms emerged from running into walls, realizing our assumptions come to the surface when conflict happens. Other people's assumptions come to the surface when conflict happens. And then you have to discern and name what that is. And
what's happening here.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. We didn't like go into an conclave, some kind of clave with white smoke.
Any kind of clave.
Any clave at all. There's no clave happening.
Nope.
And with the smoke, and then we emerged with these tablets of axioms. They're more of like, how do we stop? How do we stop getting so frustrated and start helping people who are frustrated by us?
Yeah, yeah. And so each one of these, we've introduced this term on the podcast before, but each one of these are kind of like a kairos in our training and our discipleship, saying like, why is this? What is this? What is this issue that we keep running into? So anyway, this seventh axiom emerges from that practice, and it's actually about that practice, because the seventh axiom is
about the way that we learn. So the sixth axiom that we talked about was that the goal of our discipleship is not moral perfection or doctrinal certitude. It's not about what we know and knowing better and more correct things, nor is it about behavior primarily. Not that, you know, we talked about that, but
yes.
But yeah, so not that those things are bad, but they're not the goal. They're not. We have to aim past those things if we're going to actually get those things. And so the goal then of our discipleship is divine union. It's union with God. It's becoming one with Him and with one another in the body of Christ.
Yep.
And so this axiom emerges a little bit from that, in that if love, and if God is love, then our union with Him is expressed in and through love.
Yes.
And so if the goal of our discipleship is love, and it's not just knowing things and doing things, then that has huge impact for how we learn, how we grow. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we're still trying to make this axiom axiomatic, trying to condense it in a succinct, pithy saying. Mm-hmm. There's these assumptions we keep running into about how we learn that deal with if I can think about this more, then I will get it.
Right.
Right? We live in a world that presupposes that we can access and control our lives and reality through our prefrontal cortex,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the solution to learning is thinking more,
right?
Memorizing more,
yeah.
Taking more input in,
yeah. Reading another book,
right? So if I increase my information,
mm-hmm.
I will learn this.
Yeah, it'll get into my brain and then somehow filter into my body.
Yes,
through that, you know, it's like percolated.
Yes,
it'll percolate.
Right. Well, there are. Okay. So, for instance, my wife's an accountant. It's tax season right now. Yes. There are certain tax laws that you have to learn, and then you by those rules, you do different deductions and reductions and enclaves. You know, you have different things that you're
there's various kinds of claves.
Various kinds of things. Yes. So there is a sense in which for certain disciplines.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
You learn primarily by accessing your cognitive.
Yeah.
Discursive mind.
Right. I'm going to read an article about this and I'll know how to fill out this tax form.
Yes. Yeah.
True story. Yeah.
Yeah. So there
actually happened to me last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I filled out my tax form after I read, I was like, how do I do this? And I read an article and I was like, oh, I get how to do this now.
Great.
Yeah.
So it's not that the mind or cognition is unimportant for learning how to love. It's just insufficient.
Right.
Right. So that's part of this. The other part of this is love is not something primarily that it's not a sentiment. It's mm-hmm. not primarily this feeling I get when I smell roses and listen to Bette Midler.
Yes.
Right. It's not primarily this sensory experience, but love is a disposition, a posture. A way of being in the world,
mm-hmm.
right? That needs to be learned through not just by hearing sermons about love, but by actually participating in it.
Yes.
Right? So the other night, my son is 9 and he has dreams of being a professional athlete. He has my genes. I'm 5'10, a little bit over 140 pounds. And
the second podcast where you've mentioned your weight.
Well, I haven't been on a scale for years. So I don't really know what... I don't know. It could be anything.
It used to be that, and I feel bigger.
Yes. Anyway, so he's saying, Dad, I want to play basketball. Hmm. And, you know, I'm trying not to crush his little dream of playing professional basketball.
Right.
Because we're watching LeBron James, and I'm thinking, how do I explain to him that LeBron ain't your daddy?
Right.
But I said, well, Deacon, you need to work on dribbling with your left hand. And so I show him, he's a right-handed kid. I said, you have to train your body to dribble with your left hand, and you can't read a book about dribbling with your left hand.
Right.
You can't watch somebody dribble with their left hand.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to take a basketball and dribble with your left hand a lot, right?
Do you think this would work? I heard stories, inspirational stories, about Larry Bird, Indiana native.
Tell me about
it. Who used to walk everywhere around French Lick, where he's from, dribbling with his left hand.
Did he really?
Yeah. Do you think that would work? If you told your son that story, would he learn how to dribble with his left hand. What? It is true, though. He did that.
Larry Bird, son of a gun. That guy.
That guy. No. That's why he was so good with his left.
Okay, well, I'll let Deacon know. Larry Bird ain't your daddy either. No. But if you...
No. But here's but. Something Larry Bird did.
So anyway, I tell him to dribble with his left hand. So my son, who, bless his heart, he's really good at most things he tries. And so when he tries something he's not good at...
Oh, man.
Guess what?
Story of my life.
It's devastating.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So he decides to graduate from dribbling. He dribbles for like 15 seconds. And I tell him that the goal of this is that you'd learn how to actually shoot with your left-hand layups. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm not very good shooting left-handed layups. And I don't know, I probably put in 3,000 hours trying to do that. My son, who's 9, has never tried. And so he's trying to balance this basketball on his left hand. It's falling off to the side. He can't even get it to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
I go inside because there's other things to do. I have adulting to do. You right. know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And he comes, he calls me outside and he's bawling. He's in tears. Daddy, I can't do it. I can't even get to the rim. Like he's just bawling. And I look at my watch and it's literally been 8 minutes.
Yeah.
From the time he realized he had to get better with his left hand until him being devastated that he's awful with his left hand took 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so the other part of how we learn, like, and this is really important. Because I think in our expertise, command and control world, where leaders have to execute and produce and perform, failure is not an option.
Right.
Failure actually proves that you aren't qualified to be a leader. Now, we'll say there's certain failures, right? I mean, every week we read about different leaders in our world and in our churches who are failing in ways that do call into question like their qualifications or fitness for leading a group of people, right? There's abuse of power,
right,
you know.
Right.
There's wanton licentiousness.
Yep.
Let the reader understand.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think the way we learn when love is the goal there's an analogy to this basketball thing because failure, it changes our relationship to failure. Mm-hmm. We have to get in and try things and experiment. We have to learn our limits. We have to fail. We have to then be restored. Like with my son, like I went into a neurobiological lesson with him because he's fascinated by this stuff. And I'm like, your brain actually has to develop new pathways like to your left hand.
Right.
So that your left hand, your nervous system, your body brain knows what it's doing. Right now it doesn't.
Right.
Right? And he's still crying. He's still crying. He's still crying. Anyway, 24 hours later, he hits a layup. And it's like...
With his left hand.
But it was a great moment to say, if you would have stopped when you failed, you never would have learned.
Right. You never would have learned. And he wouldn't have even known that he needed to learn unless he had failed.
Exactly.
He wouldn't have understood how bad he is with his left hand until he just can't even get the ball up there, right?
Right.
So failure, not only is it okay, but it's actually necessary. There's no other way for us to understand what we need to know, what we need to learn next.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it's necessary. And, you know, Scripture tells us that failure actually builds character. It actually builds resiliency and endurance and perseverance.
Right.
And if we didn't fail, if we didn't suffer, if we didn't come to our own limitations, right, we would not learn those. We don't have those things characterologically just coming out of the womb.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those things have to be built into us by through overcoming and being resilient in the face of failure.
Yes. So I think the basketball, like that's a really great analogy because I think everybody can understand that. Like if I want to get better at piano or if I want to get better at basketball, if I want to get better at driving, it takes practice, it takes participation in the activity that I want to get better at.
Yep.
How does this then relate to discipleship or us facilitating a greater union in love with the Lord? Like how does this learn? How does this translate into the actual practice of discipleship, learning to love?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think Paul gets at this in 1 Corinthians 4. He's talking about the Corinthians. They have kind of a celebrity culture where they're flocking to the latest greatest celebrity, right? And instead of turning on the radio or downloading the Gravity Leadership Podcast, they are going to street corners and listening, right? And then they kind of bring them to the church. And I follow Paulus. I follow Cephas. I follow Paul. And Paul says, you don't need another celebrity. You don't need another tutor. You've got 10,000 tutors.
Right.
All these people talking, filling your heads with stuff. You don't need this. And in fact, when I come to Corinth, he says this, my missional strategy wasn't to compete in the marketplace of ideas. This is so important. Selah. He does not out-celebrity the celebrity culture, but he subverts it. He says, I chose to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified. And that doesn't just mean that he proclaimed that. He did. But he embodied it. He lived it. And in 1 Corinthians 4, he says, you didn't need me to preach amazing sermons about this. Your problem isn't that you were just stupid about Jesus. Right. The problem is your hearts, your loves have been trained to want celebrities.
Yes.
So in order for you not to want a celebrity, it wasn't like if you increase your knowledge that your heart will just be overcome. That's not the logic Paul used or ever uses. Rather, he said, I became your father.
Yeah. I'm playing a different game. I'm doing something completely different.
I became your father in the faith so that you would learn Jesus. Yeah. And because I fathered Timothy, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to father you too, right? And then what we need is more fathers. And so a father then doesn't just teach, but he trains.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't just teach, he trains. So what's like? What's the difference between those two things? How would you know if you're teaching without training? And how would you know if you're training?
Training involves teaching.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Sure.
But teaching doesn't necessarily involve training. So another way to say this is, a number of people have said this. I think the modern promise is that we think our ways into new ways of living. Right? So if we can conceptually grasp this, then we can apply it to our lives. In fact, inductive Bible study is interpret, understand it, and then you take that concept and you apply it.
Yeah.
Interpret, apply.
I'm in charge the whole time.
Right, right. Yeah. And what we're pushing back on that and saying we are much more complicated than that.
Yes.
Right? So we don't just think our ways into new ways of living. Deacon, you can't sit and think about dribbling a basketball and then be able to do it. But you also have to dribble your way into a new way of thinking. You also have to live your way into a new way of thinking.
Yeah. The neurological pathways don't get burned in by reading about Larry Bird dribbling with his left hand.
No.
The neurological pathways, the thinking part of it, if you will, get burned in by actually doing layups with your left hand and failing at it and learning that you need, you know, building your muscles and all kinds of other stuff that happens with your body.
Yes.
That which is then giving you signals and telling you, okay, this is where you need to grow.
Yeah, so then we learn by giving just enough information to get our bodies engaged.
Yes.
In some participative, experiential, transformative dribbling with my left hand.
Yes.
Right? Try this out.
Mm-hmm.
Try it out. And then when you can't do it, when you fail,
mm-hmm.
I'll come alongside you and help.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's training.
Yes.
Training is having an environment where failure is safe.
Mm.
When you fail, you don't become a failure. You can fail forward. You can learn how to be fearless about failure because failure is the incubator. It's the touch point of learning. It's ground zero for transformation to break into our lives.
So we're about 16 minutes into this podcast, and I don't think we've even attempted.
Who's counting? Are you counting?
Well, the timer right there.
Oh, it's telling you.
But we haven't attempted yet to say, like, what is this axiom? And so let me give it a try.
put it together.
And we've talked, you know, I mean, maybe...
Talked around
maybe the people listening, you know, maybe you guys could help us with this as well. But the way we learn then, if the goal is love and divine union, the way we learn, to put it positively, is that we learn through participation in that which we're learning to do.
Yes.
We learn by participation in love.
Yes.
We have to put our bodies out there in some way for our discipleship to really take root in our lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's a corollary then. So we learn by through participating,
mm-hmm.
right? But then as we participate, we are enabled, our capacity of what we can know increases too.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. New vistas of knowledge are opened up as we participate.
Yes,
as we do.
Paul talks about this in Philippians 1 and Ephesians 3. He talks about how, like in Ephesians 3, he says, I pray that you would know the love that surpasses knowledge, right? Be filled with all the fullness of God. And in that prayer, he is his understanding of how love increases our capacity for understanding comes out. Because it's this reflexive thing. As you love more, you'll know more. And as you know more, it's real knowledge if you actually love more.
Right.
Right? That's how you know it's knowledge.
Right.
That's the knowledge that doesn't puff up.
Right.
Right? But, you know, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 8, like, love builds up.
Builds up, yeah.
Right? And that's the knowledge that we're to be after.
Right, right. And it's more of an experiential knowledge than an intellectual knowledge.
So love is learned through participation.
Yes. One thing we haven't said, it's participation and then reflection upon that participation.
Debriefing. Right.
So there's a dialectic in training, right, between participation and reflection, between try this out and, okay, let's talk about it. How did it go? What did you notice, right? Between the experience of doing something and failing or succeeding, who knows, but then you know, explaining what was happening. So there's this dialectic between those two things. You see this in Jesus sending out the disciples. Right?
Yeah.
Jesus sending out the 72, yeah, or the 12, where Jesus says, okay, you guys have seen me do this, right? You've seen me cast out demons, you know? So, hey, discipleship 101, I want you to go into all these towns, two by two.
Go for it.
Go for it. You know, cast out demons, raise the dead, cure the sick.
Do stuff to stuff.
Just go for it, right? Look for a person of peace, and, you know, he gave them some basic instructions. But the learning happened for them on the way. And actually, in this case, through their success.
Yes.
Through their success, they were like, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. And Jesus rejoices with them. They go on a retreat. He debriefs with them. He talks about, he's starting to teach them, like, you actually are going to be doing the same things that I'm doing.
Yes.
Right? I'm sharing my life with you and my mission with you.
Yeah.
I just thought of as well, they also then learn through failure. I'm thinking about Jesus coming down off the Mount of Transfiguration. And the disciples who didn't go up there with him, he discovers them arguing with the Pharisees, right?
Oh,
and they can't cast out the demon.
Jesus does not like that argument, by the way.
No.
How long am I going to deal with you?
Yeah, this is what this is. He gets a little testy with his disciples here.
I would say this is the moment of the greatest exasperation and frustration that Jesus ever exhibits.
Mm.
It's when his disciples are arguing with religious leaders.
Which I connect to their inability to cast out the demon. The reason they can't operate in kingdom power is because they have done the thing that Jesus has been telling them not to do.
They're stuck in an antagonism.
They're stuck in an antagonism, and they have no access to the kingdom of God. Why couldn't we cast the demon out? And Jesus says, this kind only comes out by prayer.
which is so funny.
It is funny, because how do the other ones come out? They all come out by prayer. Jesus is like, well, this kind's is special. It comes out the way that they all come out. He's being a little sarcastic.
Praying.
Maybe. Yeah.
Not arguing.
Right. So praying and arguing are, anyway, so they learn, right? Through their failure, their inability to cast out the demon, they're starting to learn something about, praying and arguing. Like Jesus could have had a class where he says, hey, praying and arguing are different. And you can't do one while you're doing the other.
Yeah. And they would take notes.
And they would be like, okay, that's a great
concept. They memorize
it
for a test.
Right, yeah.
Right.
But then when the Pharisees come and they start taunting them about like, hey, can you cast out the demon if your master's not here? They're like, I'll show you. They just get right into
They don't say, hang on a second, let me access my notes from the class Jesus taught 4 weeks ago to figure out how to respond.
Right,
to this.
Right. Hold on. I have an answer for you. No, they fail. And that's the crucible then for their learning.
Right. So training turns failure from a thing that disqualifies to a thing that refines and grows and shapes.
Yes.
So we have to have safe spaces in our discipleship vehicles for people to fail.
Hmm.
People have to fail. And what happens is our two main vehicles for discipleship, classes and discussion groups, we're primarily trafficking in information. And there's no experimentation happening. There's no real-life modeling or imitation. There's no dribbling with your left hand. There's just talking ad infinitum about dribbling with left hand.
Right. We're talking about something else that we're not actually doing now in the moment. But so give us. We're about at time here.
All right.
We got some scriptural examples. Here's how Jesus did this with his disciples. Give us a concrete example. How does this work out in discipleship? Like, how do you train somebody? Like, give us an example of a time this happened in your life or somebody that you're discipling.
I mean, it's so obvious that I think it scandalizes us.
Hmm.
I think it works in our discipleship the same way it works with my son on the driveway.
Yes.
We have to have spaces where people can bring their kairos moments mm-hmm. of failure,
yeah.
frustration, anger, anxiety. Yeah. Why? Because God's present and at work in their life, mm-hmm. that he cares about things more than he does. Right?
Axioms 1 and 2, by
right?
the way.
The God who is at work in their life is just like Jesus, and he right. wants to meet them where they really are.
Yep.
Well, where they really are is their frustration that every day they get off work, come home, and their patience with their family evaporates in 2 minutes.
Right.
We have to come alongside them there and say, this is dribbling with your left hand.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the good news you need to hear about this.
Yeah.
Right? The gospel that speaks to whatever bad news is at work in you. Right?
Yeah.
Now, here's an experiment of trust. Here's an experiment where if the kingdom of God had fully come,
mm-hmm.
this is how you would be living. Let's try that. Let's right. try that. And in that participation,
yeah.
right? You are learning how to lay hold of grace. You're learning how to live mm-hmm. by faith. You're walking out your yeah. salvation with yeah. fear and trembling.
Yeah.
We need more driveway basketball talking kind yeah. of groups yeah. in our churches.
Yeah. So I just want to play that out a little bit. So if I'm frustrated with my family, I lose my patience. I get frustrated with my family, like when I get home from work. Is the goal then for me to just try to stop being frustrated? Is it to grip my teeth? I feel like I know what you're going to say, but give us an imagination. Yeah. Like, what would that look like for me if that is my situation? Do I just grip my teeth and try harder to be nice?
Well, those are our two. I mean, if it's cognitive certitude, it's memorize 16 fighter verses about anger,
right.
and apply them to your life,
uh-huh.
right? If it's moral behavior, it's moralism, right? We simply shame ourselves or guilt ourselves into more patience.
Try harder to be patient.
I shouldn't yell.
Yeah.
Right? And we have elaborate schemes of accountability and creating punishments and consequences for our
right.
behaviors. We
right.
try to manage our behavior.
I'll have to pay you $10 every time I yell at my kids.
This is the money jar I put a dollar in every time I yell. Like,
yeah, yeah.
you know, and those things have short-term benefit. Let me
sure.
just say, like,
yeah.
Okay. there's a way of, like, sometimes you got to rescue your kid out of the street. You don't have time to teach them how to stay in the yard. You just have to go get them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So there's certain times when that's okay, but for training in righteousness,
yeah,
for training in wisdom and becoming a loving person,
mm-hmm.
external managing of behavior through consequences, bribes, threats, etc., it's rubbish.
Yes.
So so quickly, there's a reason. So I don't intend to yell at my kids when I'm driving home. I'm right. not fantasizing about how am I going to ruin my evening by yelling at my children.
Right.
Right?
Right.
My intention, my aspiration is to enjoy them.
Yes.
But there's something living in me.
Mm-hmm.
In my body. We say in our bones, in our heart.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We call it the wanter. There's something I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
That my kids, whatever they're doing, threatens or
right.
or inhibits
right.
or goes counter to that, contrary
right.
to what I want, right?
So maybe it's just peace and quiet.
Maybe.
I feel like peace and quiet is going to give me the life that I need.
Right, but this is the deal. It could be one of 300 things for me.
Right.
The way that Jesus deals with these kinds of kairos moments is uh-huh. he asks questions to excavate people's hearts. What's really going, why do you call me good?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let me see a coin. Whose picture's on it? Like yeah. he asks all these questions to excavate people's hearts.
Yeah.
Right?
What are you really going after?
What do you really want? And if you'll trust me with what you really want, friends, read the scriptures and notice that the people who trust Jesus what they really want receive the most breakthrough.
Yeah.
The people who want to play games with Jesus, argue with him, prove, justify themselves, play it safe,
mm-hmm.
they don't get much. They go away
yeah.
sad.
Yeah.
Or they want to kill him, one of the two, right? So for me,
yeah.
we create spaces where, just like I came alongside Deacon, and I was able to hear the bad news for my son, was that he's tied his identity to his competency.
Mm.
So when he fails shooting with his left hand, he's a failure.
Right.
And in that moment, I knew I needed to minister to him that failure is normal.
Yeah.
Remember who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're loved.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to be a great basketball player to be loved. And so because of that, you can fail and you're not a failure.
Right.
Right? You can yeah. fail forward, right? So anyway, for him.
Yeah.
But we need discipleship places where we can do that too.
Yeah.
We can discern together. What's the bad news? Why is anger such a good idea to me?
Yeah.
Right? What's
yeah.
the story I'm believing
mm-hmm.
right now that makes anger like the best thing I could do that then later I run away and I weep at night. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I run away at night and just start crying. Mm-hmm. Right? What is that? And then what does the Lord want me to hear? What's the good news about that?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so it's not about correcting our behavior here. It's about hearing the good news about the whatever desire we discern, whatever's really at work in our lives. We need to hear good news from God about that.
Yes.
Which, and you know, normally the good news is you already have what you're trying to get. You already have it in the gospel.
Yeah.
You have belonging, you have significance, you have security. Like, you've got what you need. You can rest in it.
I received that, Ben. Yeah, so that's what we need, and that's how we learn. So we learn then, not just by hearing, but by hearing and doing, right? This is James chapter 1 or 2, or James, where you don't look into the perfect law, the law of love, and go away and forget who you are. No, you remember who you are, and you act in accordance with that. And as you act in accordance to love, as you experiment and train in trusting love, we learn.
Yes.
That's how we learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we learned. This is super important, friends. So as you're listening to this podcast, feel free to take notes. I don't think anybody's taking notes. but the takeaway here is that you'll only learn when your body's engaged, when you participate, when you go for it. When you you don't learn to walk on water by thinking about walking on water.
Yeah.
You learn to walk on water by doing it.
You get out of the boat.
So friends, may you go today. May you go today with a confidence that as the Lord leads, you can experiment in trusting His love, that your failure is not final, that who you are is settled in Jesus Christ, and so you're free to fail forward into His love, into His grace, as you learn how to follow Him.
Amen.
Go in peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you review podcasts. You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for a future episode. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles that we found interesting or helpful in our work as local pastors and practitioners of discipleship and mission. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.